Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big issues in this republic of inequality. We are the podcast of solutions and the podcast of hope, and I'm your host, Rory Hearn, and I'm absolutely delighted to be joined today by as part of a series of podcasts in partnership with the Global Tax Justice Alliance. Now, the Global Alliance for Tax Justice is a global coalition in the tax justice movement. They are a campaign for progressive and redistributive taxation systems nationally and for inclusive and representative global tax government. And essentially, why this is important now is because wealthy people, banks, and multinational corporations have built a sophisticated system of secretive international financial centers, which are essentially called tax havens, supported by armies of accountants, lawyers, and lobbyists in order to deliberately pay less tax on their profits and wealth. And yes, this group is entirely dependent on publicly funded infrastructure and institutions and publicly educated workforces to make their money. Now, Ireland has a particular role in all of this, but also this is important for us internationally in terms of solidarity and development across the world. We are joined today, absolutely delighted to be joined by Graziele David, who is a PhD candidate for economic development at the State University of Campinas and advisor at the Latin American Fiscal Justice Network. But before I go to Graziele, I'd just like to bring back in Tony Groves, of course, from Echo Chambers and TortoiseShack.ie, which we are a part of. And Tony has organized these podcasts in partnership with the Tax Justice Network. Tony, why do you think these podcasts and this issue is important?
Well, I want to just make a point that recently there was a vote in the EU to say that Ireland is officially a tax haven. We come up against it, and people say that we benefit from it, and we do benefit from it enormously. We've seen in the results recently where Ireland's economy has shown that it grew during the pandemic. But what we've seen, what that means for real people, is our GDP is inflated. It's not a real figure. And then when the pandemic funds are made available by the EU and the ECB and the other institutions, we can't actually avail of them, even though we need them, because they say your economy is doing well, therefore you don't need anything. Even though our homelessness rate is at its highest in the history of the state, we have more people out of work at the moment, we have a health service that is effectively really on its knees. And so if you don't think it matters right now, that's the impact that these inflated figures are having. And to put it in a wider concept, what we want to talk about today, we're also, we can't have it both ways. We can't keep taking dinner off the tables in other countries and thinking that that this won't have some sort of recourse in the years to come. It really is something we should be mindful of now and acting on now, as opposed to when, you know, these laws change, because they will change. There's no question. Inequality has become the main driver, and the pandemic has put a focus on that we haven't seen, maybe, Rory, in the last 10, 15 years of all our activism. We haven't seen this sort of level of interest in it, public interest. So I'm delighted that the guys agreed to talk to us. I mean, they've been nominated for a bloody Nobel Peace Prize, which is fantastic to see. So this stuff is breaking through. People are listening.
Yeah, no, I think it's really important to put that context on it, that, you know, this is something, and, you know, I remember over 20 years ago taking part in protests against the IMF in Europe and in Latin America. I went as part of the World Social Forums calling for tax justice with organizations like ATTAC and others. You know, this is a movement that has been growing for decades. And it's really important, I think, in terms of to hear the voices that are advocating for that. So just in terms of, I suppose, the whole question of tax evasion versus tax avoidance, Graziele, maybe you could outline kind of what are your key analysis of the situation at the moment in regards to tax injustice and the tax system globally?
On that, I think we should maybe start navigating on the theory, like the concepts behind each one of these names. Yeah. I would say that tax avoidance is what is legal, what is at the border of what is legal, on the capacity of those who are able to do a very aggressive tax planning. And then they would say that the tax evasion, that's the illegal one and the one that should be stopped. However, let's think a little bit about this. If tax evasion is at the border, it's what is aggressive, how can we be sure that it's yet legal or illegal? Or especially, should we be pricing those who are able to use the spots or the the loopholes on the norms. We shouldn't. That's the big point. We shouldn't be making this difference, because it's like we're giving a prize. Oh, congratulations. You are so able to use the law to go on a way to take money away from the nations, from people, from health, from education. Congratulations on that. So no, we shouldn't keep doing this. We shouldn't prize those who are able to use and manipulate norms. That's why we're stopping use these two terms. We're not saying tax evasion and tax avoidance anymore. We are using the word tax abuse to talk about what's happening. And that's why we are, when we talk about illicit financial flows, we are also using the data on tax avoidance to say how much is lost on illicit financial flows, because that has to change. It's not a matter of using the loopholes of the law. It's a matter of fixing them and stopping the tax abuse and the illicit financial flows. Because as a matter of fact, what that does is that hurts the state's capacity to use the maximum available resources to ensure human rights and to ensure environmental, which is on the basis of this crisis we are living now on the pandemics.
Can I come in just on the, so I think it's wonderful that we move on the language, because the language is important, especially Ireland has built up a network, and this network is just part of a chain of on the world that is tax avoidance, is how they would frame it. But tax abuse is much more what it actually genuinely is, because people actually have to sit down, and these loopholes don't just happen. They didn't just think, oh, I forgot to include that. They happen because of lobbyists, they happen because of influence, and they happen because capital and how the power of, when capital influences the policies, this is how it happens. Have you found that more people have been able to understand it when you talk about it in terms of tax abuse as opposed to this network?
Yes, it's quite interesting, because when we started saying tax abuse, and some journalists would come to us and say, so you have this new report on illicit financial flows. What are you talking about tax abuse? Does that include tax avoidance? Like, if it's such a big matter to say what is tax avoidance and what is tax elusion? And when we would say, no, we are including everything, they would go like, oh, but that's not technical. And we would say, oh, isn't it? Because it's really a matter of what you're saying. It's like the loopholes don't exist by themselves. They exist because of the lobby, because of the idea behind of it, to use these loopholes to, to make tax evasion, but pretending that it's legal, actually. So it's not okay to keep using this as an excuse to take money away from countries, from people. And it's interesting, because after we start repeating this a lot, many journalists are accepting this. And I believe that this might get to population, like they might be able to agree on this. And I would say that when we say tax abuse, people actually understand it better. It's like, it's not just a name like tax avoidance. Who understand that? But when you say that's not tax abuse, that's abuse, people understand what we're talking about.
And I think as well, it's a really important term to really, you know, try and talk about now and get it out there. And linked with that, I think, is to try, and maybe you could outline the scale of the evasion that goes on, the scale of the problem, and trying to, like, the way you use tax abuse there, people, you get that in your head straight away, you understand it. But often the figures are so big, we can't get it, we can't grasp. Maybe you could outline, you know, what is the scale of it, and maybe some ways of trying to communicate that as well out to the public.
Last year, I would say November or December, the Global Alliance for Tax Justice published with two another networks, the Tax Justice Network and the Public Service International, a report called The State of Tax Justice, which actually talks about, they use some documents from the OECD, the country-by-country report from multinationals. So this is the first time they are using this kind of data. It's then which nationals itself bring delivering this data to OECD, and they are using it. So the numbers I'm going to say now, I really need to highlight this. I'm talking about at least what is lost, because they are using information from the biggest corporations, not from all. And it's not all that it's about tax justice. It's just on the illicit financial flows of these big corporations and this specific data that we have. So the problem is bigger. But let's talk about the numbers of this one that we know for sure. What we've seen on this report was that the world is losing at least $427 billion each year to international tax abuse. Of this $427 billion, nearly $245 billion is lost to multinational corporations, shifting profit into tax havens in order to underreport how much profit they are actually making in the countries where they do business, where they have their works. So that's tax havens coming to conversation. And as Tony was saying, Ireland was definitely nominated as a tax haven. So
Just to put that in context, the entire size of the entire Irish economy is $447 billion.
It's like losing. It's like an entire Ireland economy of tax abuse each year.
Yeah.
Only with this is data, so we can imagine. And the remaining $182 billion is lost to wealthy individuals hiding underclaimed assets and incomes offshore. So we have these two kinds of tax abuse happening all the time. And it's interesting because higher income countries lose more tax revenues, what is expected. They have more rich people. Corporations are mostly based on rich countries than what lower income countries lose. However, when we put this on perspective of how much revenue they can collect, it's so much bigger for the low income countries, because in percentage of what they can make of revenue of this, what should be taxes, it's huge. For example, when we make this in comparison to the health budget, the poorest country are losing almost 6% of their budget, and the rich ones 2.5%. So even though the amount is bigger of loss is bigger for the richest ones, proportionally, that affects more the poorest ones. Pretty unequal.
That is actually really important to point out, because I've seen the statistics that, you know, staff, you know, employee for employee, say in Ireland relative maybe Germany, it's nearly 4-1 the tax not paid that relative to Ireland for the employee that they have in, say, Germany. So Germany is losing more relative to Ireland, but it has less of an impact as, say, it would in a developing country where these corporations are. And I think that's really important that people understand that. It's not that Germany is happy that Ireland is doing this. It's just that it's not having as big an impact. The scale, that's what's known, okay? But how that actually filters down to say the living standards for people, have we got any idea of what that means in terms of, you've referred to sort of 6% on budgets, what that actually means in how it can manifest itself in living standards, say maybe wages or the impact it could have on those areas?
Yeah, so for example, the same report brought some information. It says that on average, the lower income countries are losing tax equivalent to nearly 52% of their healthy budgets, while higher income countries are losing the equivalent to 8.4% of their health budgets. That means that with the sum of what it's lost to tax havens every year globally, we could pay for the annual salaries of over 34 million nurses, for example, in this moment of a pandemic, how important that would be. I believe that it's also important to say, when we talk about affecting the health budget, we should also look who are the persons behind this. So normally, at least in countries in Latin America, for example, where we are low income countries, and when we look to the public health, we can see that those who have more money, they can pay for private health, and those who don't, they have to use public services. And at least in Brazil, where I'm from, it's a good system, it's universal. And however, I would say 20% of the population has private health. But among the poorest ones, who do we have? We have women and we have Black population. So when we say that we are losing money that could go to health, that could properly finance health, we are also saying that we are affecting disproportionately Black women, for example. So we need to bring this on. Who are we hurting with all this tax abuse?
And I think alongside that as well is something to, which I know you're highlighting, is the inequality that we have. This, it's adding to the rise in the global elite, the global billionaires. And when you say an interesting, you know, when the money is lost, of course, it's not actually lost. It's going to the wealthy and it's going to investment, which is very damaging, like, you know, investment in housing globally. Or, you know, is there other areas that you've looked at the damaging where that money is going to, that the damage of this inequality at the top end?
Yes, you're absolutely right. It's what I was trying to talk about was inequality, and the use of the word lost, it's not proper actually. Well, it's one side of the coin, let's say. It's like we are losing, but it's going, someone is finding, let's say. And not just finding, someone is actually making the way to cause this loss. So this is highly important to talk about. It's not just a loss, it's someone actually making the loss happen. So the lose happen. So yeah.
Just on the, but when we talk about it in that context, it's really important. I think listeners should understand this when, you know, the idea that when we call it, I think in environmentalism they call it extractivism, when you're removing, you're taking away, and you're taking it. But what we're seeing now is in 2020, I think it was the IMF said we haven't seen such a movement of wealth from the bottom to the top in exchange in the history of the world. It's taken place in the midst of a pandemic, you know. So when the last time it happened, actually, funnily enough, was during the global financial crisis, when wealth shot from the bottom to the top at that rate. And now we've broken that record, they estimate. And this is the IMF saying this, so they're not exactly the most friendly of organizations to these challenges. Can I ask, in terms of the wider network, how do you find our individual countries more, you know, say, for, like, I can talk from example from Ireland, where our media have maintained several times that we're not a tax haven, despite the EU saying it's a tax haven. Have you found that when, as a network, you talk about tax abuse and tax justice, have you found that there is pushback from these, you know, the countries that are involved and the corporates that are involved? Has there been, you know, a campaign against your campaign?
Maybe, I don't know, probably yes, and they hide it, I don't know, probably. It's interesting. It's like, I would say that the way this happens probably is more on the national level. It's where actually the against movement actually happens on the international level. Normally people will just say, oh, yes, we agree on this. This is really important. But it's nationally that you need to change some laws, and that's nationally. And when we go to the national level, what actually happens? And just adding something here, you were talking about the IMF. And IMF is a very specific case on this, because when we go to the international meetings, they are talking about inequality. They are talking about this move from wealth from the bottom to top. But when we come to national level, when, for example, the chapter 4 on each country, what they are actually saying for states is, especially the low-income ones or the developing countries, they are saying, you should go for austerity measures, you should cut budget, you should. So it's like they talk about something international level, they make studies saying things, and then when we go to the specific, to the local, they are saying the opposite. So I would say that the biggest campaign against tax justice actually happens on the national level. Yeah. And by doing the opposite of what you say. So it's not okay to just say beautiful words and agree with us on the international level. We need this to be a practice. We need this to be real. We need changes on the national level. We need changes on law. We need to close these loopholes. It's not enough just to talk. We are over that time.
And I think that's a really important point to make, that we are absolutely over this time, you know. And I think there is a growing, you know, sense globally that we are, and that the level of inequality is gone. So, you know, just people are, you know, really suffering from it, but they know it's damaging. It's damaging our planet. It's damaging, you know, our societies. And maybe just you could outline, because I think it is so important that we always have, you know, clear ideas and solutions for what should be done. It's not just enough to critique. What do you think are the key things that should be done at a national level and an international level?
So let's just start with the international level. We need an equal play level, let's say. We need a really international space where all countries are able to talk about tax justice, are able to talk about financial system, about tax systems, and where they can plan together. We live in a very interconnected economy, and we need our decisions on tax, on finance, to also have this space very interconnected. And what we have today is that most of these decisions are being made at the OECD. And even though they say on BEPS and Pillar 1 and Pillar 2 that they are opening to hear what other countries are saying, that's not completely true, because many of the decisions aren't yet transparent, and they are just hearing, but they are not voting. So one of the campaigns that the Global Alliance for Tax Justice has been doing for a long time is asking for a UN global tax body for all the countries to be able to have the information to talk, to share, and to vote, to decide really together. We can't just have the big ones saying something and we just hearing. We are the ones losing most, and we need to be engaged on the decisions made. Are you willing to say?
I think that's really important that people understand. So if we can look at it from how we make that decision, look at Ireland's position. Apple dwarfs Ireland as an economy. Apple, if you put it alone as a business, is just, you know, I think it's something like 24 times the size of Ireland in terms of what they have. And we took a case to make sure that they didn't have to pay the taxes that they didn't have to pay. On part of that also comes down to Ireland's fear of the power of capital. And I am not justifying it. I'm simply saying that if you're in a certain mindset, and this is how they do business, Ireland was in a position that they were turned around and they said to the EU, actually, no, this is how... It goes back to what you said at the beginning, Graziella. This isn't tax evasion. This is tax avoidance, and we have actually legalized this. So the crime is what we made legal, if that makes sense. We made it legal, and we were able to stand it up and say, this is if you come here and you play by these rules, we will allow you to do this. We will facilitate that. And to say that out loud and understand it for people, what it means is, you know, it means in the middle of a pandemic, as you pointed out, less nurses, less doctors, less money to buy PPE, less ventilators, all of these things. And it really, really resonates with me when you say, if there was a forum internationally, like a UN forum where we could go, we could discuss and we could be open about it, you might have transparency and you might have, I think, now, some of the people would say the risk is that maybe other countries will then say, well, we're going to do what you do. But not if there's actually international cooperation, not if inequality is the driver. And I think that's your key point, Rory, that people are fed up of inequality. They have decided now that it's time to see a redistribution model. And even when you see it, we see this is coming true now. Last thing for me is just to ask, in terms of national governments, in terms of movements within countries, how do we put pressure to bring change?
Yeah, well, I think that we should also use some of the international movements to try to put this pressure on the national level. So let's say, for example, the IMF and the World Bank, when they are going to make they are going to help countries with money, let's say, and they make a contract, instead of just saying the beautiful words of combating inequality on the global speeches, they should do that on the national contracts. They shouldn't be writing on austerity measures. They should be writing on tax justice, on tax revenues. They should be looking to this on the contracts also. So maybe the IMF, maybe, no, for sure, the IMF and the World Bank should be big players on this, on pushing national governments to actually move on this way. So this should be on the contracts. Like, we are going to borrow this land. I don't know what the word is. Borrow? Is it borrow?
Well, no, you're right. We'll borrow money from the IMF, but the banks themselves will, yeah, the Troika lend the money, but nonetheless.
Okay, so just going back. So the IMF, when they borrow the money, they should put on the contracts something guiding the national governments. So we're borrowing this and you're going to pay us back by taking these measures that actually reduce inequality and improve your economy instead of hurting people's lives and actually not having good economic effects as we've seen in many cases. So, and also we should use other spaces like the OECD itself or the UN or the space of the international exchange, for example, to make, you know, like when we make the negotiations, we should bring this to the contracts. I think that if we use the international contracts, we could be making some national changes too. And for example, we are discussing a lot a partnership between the Mercosul, which is the Latin America
mega company.
With the European Union, like they are going to make a trade. Mm. And when we are discussing this, we have the opportunity to actually have good normatives on this. So for example, maybe on how to better prevent the environment, to defend the environment, to not destroy it so much as we're seeing this happening. Even during the pandemic, the Amazonian forest is being destroyed, the Pantanal, which is another very important area for the environment. We should have some things on tax justice, on reducing inequality. All of these are ways to bring change to national level, from the international level, from cooperation. So we have the opportunity, but instead of using this, we are actually exploiting more and increasing inequality. So we have the chance to change that. We should use the pandemic and what we're living to look and say, it's not okay the way we're living. It's not okay to keep exploiting and keep increasing inequality. We got to change. And we can keep using the same instruments, but in another way.
I think that's really, really, really timely for Ireland. And I know, Rory, I'm sorry, I know you want to come in, but I just want to make a point. Ireland is at the moment in a position of ratifying CETA, like a mini Mercosur between the EU and Canada. And if we do ratify it, it gives investor courts more powers to actually to interfere in our processes. We're going to have investor dispute courts that we don't actually have currently. And if Ireland is as great at foreign direct investment as our figures say they are, because we're one of the main, like I think we're, you know, there's 8 countries that make up nearly 85% of global tax evasion, and we're tax avoidance, and we're one of them. If Ireland is as great at that as we say we are, we don't need to give the corporations more powers. But wouldn't these trade deals be so much better if we put tax justice into them as opposed to investor more powers to the investors? It's not even a question, it's just more a statement, I suppose. Sorry, Rory.
No, I just wanted to come in and follow on from that directly, Graziella. Maybe you could say, you know, what would be your message to Irish, you know, politicians, Irish government and the public about, you know, the impact of our policies and why they need to change?
I would say that we live in the same planet. That's the first thing. So it doesn't really matter so much if you're in a north country and I'm in a south country, you're in Europe and I'm in Latin America. It's the same planet, and we are being hurt the same. And I guess that the pandemic, especially when we see that it might have come due to all the environment changes that we have, the climate crisis, and how one virus can affect us all, even if it's unequal, we are all being affected. So I would say that we should take this very sad moment that we are living as an opportunity to change and start thinking on all these contracts and deals and ways of doing business and of living and making, you know, negotiations, that it's not, I'm not saying that, oh, we should change everything. I'm just saying, let's change the way we do what we already do. Instead of, as Tanya was saying, instead of making the deal on the interest of to be good for the investors, to be good for the countries, to be good for the nature, to be good for the people. How can we change that? How can we still be doing what we do, but in a better way, in a way that don't hurt people, don't hurt the environment, And for that, I would say, what about stopping a tax haven? What would that take for Ireland? Would that mean that it would have maybe to have a new public policy on jobs? Maybe so. Maybe people should move from the financial sector to another kind of jobs. Maybe you should make a transition on that. I'm not saying just close and stop being a tax haven. I'm saying let's make a transition on that. As we're supposed to make an energetic transition and we're supposed to make a change from inequality, let's make a transition. It's going to be even better for your country too.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. And I think it's a really important call that needs to go out to our government and our people to get behind that call for a transition away from destructive financial practices. And because it is destructive, it's destructive to you and it's destructive to us. Because as we know, and we've talked about a lot, is these financial flows are affecting, for example, property investment here, pushing up housing prices. It affects us. And we are a global, you know, we are a global people and we have to move on that basis. And just maybe to finish, and I really thank you for your points you've made really eloquently today. And I know our listeners will really find a lot in it. And hopefully, you know, we will go out further. The Nobel Peace Prize that you've been nominated for as part of the International Tax Just Movement, a very, very significant nomination in recognition of the work you have done on, and as the nomination letter says, the outstanding work to expose the illicit flows and building national pressure. How important is that for you, and how important is it for the tax justice movement?
I believe that the biggest thing we can take off this Nobel Prize nomination is how tax justice has become important for everyone. It's not just like the tax justice movement itself. It's a global thing now. It's important for everyone. That for us, for sure, is what is most significant to happen. And it's like in such a hard year with the pandemic, with all the crises, with all the deaths that we're seeing and the inequality rising, it's important to have one good news. And the one good news is that tax justice is not just a matter that we've been talking about for years for ourselves. It's actually something that has gone global, that people are talking about, that they are seeing how important it is, how essential it is. So I believe that the nomination itself, it's something quite amazing. And we should really use this as like a boost for the work that we do to keep moving. Let me just see what is wrote here.
It's all right.
Okay. It's also important to say that the Global Alliance for Tax Justice has been nominating along with the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. It was them both together for the nomination.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think when I spoke to your colleague Laser previously, we were talking about the work that the ICIJ have done and some of the things that they've exposed. And again, even something as broad as the Panama Papers, when you hear the Panama Papers, you think of Panama. But no, there's a house that's actually halfway between my house and your house, Rory, that has about 125 businesses registered to it. A normal looking house. Yeah. and all registered with the Panama, all turned up in the Panama Papers. So if you don't think that tax avoidance is this global thing, we're in one global world. Graziella, David, I really, really do appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today. We do hope to cover this in more. We will be sharing this across our social media channels, and we hope that people will take an interest. It's fantastic that you've been nominated, that the work has been recognized, and the people that are doing this now. I think if I could take one lesson away, it would be to stop allowing people frame things as tax avoidance, tax evasion. Let's talk about tax abuse. Please, let's make sure that becomes the norm. That's how we refer to it, because that's what it is. We're doing other people an injustice if we don't. And then I have to do the silly plug. But guys, the Tortoise Shack has no ads, no sponsors. We are completely listener funded. So we do run on a Patreon model. It's patreon.com/Tortoise Shack. It's a price of a cup of coffee once a month, and it keeps us going because we literally rely on it completely. Thanks so much for your time. Take care.